Today on Inside Utah Politics, the special session just hours away. What we can expect when Utah's lawmakers return to Capitol Hill to vote on new congressional maps. Plus, a government shutdown paralyzes Washington. What one member of the Utah delegation thinks it'll take to get key federal programs back up and running. And Turning Point USA returns to Utah. Hear their message just weeks after founder Charlie Kirk was shot dead at Utah Valley University.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ehrts.
Well, welcome on in to Inside Utah Politics. I am Lindsay Ehrts. Let's go Inside Utah Politics. We begin our program with the debate over Utah's next congressional maps. It's reaching a fever pitch. Now, this week, the Republican Party has weighed in on which map they like, saying option C meets the criteria and stops the Democrats. Now, Democrats are calling foul that politics are supposed to stay out of the conversation.
It would be to our disadvantage to have maps that were drawn in such a way that you have congressional delegation members who don't understand the issues that affect rural Utah.
We're just asking for maps that give Democrats a fair shot and the people who want to vote for Democrats a fair opportunity to, in fact, cast their votes in a way that elects Democrats if that's what they choose to do.
Well, of course, neither Rob Axton nor Brian King, the chairs of both of those parties, are lawmakers. The legislature has the final say on the maps tomorrow per a court stipulation. Well, I'm joined today by Senator Todd Weiler. Senator, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Lindsay.
So you are a member of Senate leadership, so you're the perfect person to come talk to us today about all this drama.
Well, thanks.
So first and foremost, do you think it was appropriate for the Republican Party to pick a map?
I kind of wish they hadn't, but I will tell you, I'm getting comments from people who are telling me that they're being emailed by Alliance for Better Utah and Better Boundaries, who I think are more affiliated with the Democratic side. And so when the judge amended her ruling to allow 10 days of public comment, I think this is part of the public comment process, so I'm not necessarily offended by it. I'm telling you that myself, and I know Senator Sandel and others, we're trying to shield ourselves from the partisan data. The only partisan data I've heard from is actually what's been reported in the media by your colleagues, and I'm trying to stay away from it.
That's
but,
our job.
But I can tell you that the maps were not drawn with any partisan data. I'm 100% confident of that.
Right, but you have to go back and look at the partisan data to make sure you didn't impair.
I don't have to. Somebody
does.
But
your experts, right? So clearly it's information that you can get a hold of. I'm not saying you have or you haven't.
I haven't. I can tell you I haven't.
So. Sure. But the Republicans in that email, the party at least, said this is the map that stops the Democrats.
Yeah.
Do you agree?
I don't know. I didn't actually receive the email. If I did, I haven't read it. Right now, I think we're focused on complying with Proposition 4, which requires us to not try to protect any incumbent or give advantage to any candidate or use partisan data. And I'm following those confines, and I believe all of my colleagues are as well.
So which map do you think the legislature will pick?
I don't know for sure. I doubt it would be D or E. I'll tell you, A, B, and C, we do like, as a majority party legislator, I will tell you, we do like the idea of having more of our congressional representatives have some rural area in their district, and I'll tell you why. Congress does not really act in a way that pits Salt Lake City versus Layton or St. George versus Provo. They do a lot with federal lands, and two-thirds of our state is controlled by the federal government. So when you're talking about what Congress is doing that makes a difference, it has a much greater impact on our rural counties. And so we want all of four of our Congress people to have that skin in the game.
Yeah, I understand that argument, but I think about the people who have a different voice than the majority party here in Utah.
Yeah.
And they make up 30% of the voting Democrats in Utah, but they don't have a specific voice.
Yeah, well, and I don't know that they don't have a voice. They may not have a voice on the very few partisan issues, but there's a lot of what I call pothole issues that Congress weighs in on. They're not all abortion and redistricting, because those are partisan issues. And I will say a lot of the Western issues that we deal with water and energy and infrastructure, they are not Republican or Democratic issues. They are Western issues, and we're a Western state. So in that sense, we have a lot more in common with our neighbors who we share borders with than we do like with New Jersey or Massachusetts or Rhode Island.
Let's talk about the partisan bias test, because what is happening right now is a judge has said to the legislature, you've got to follow this criteria of Proposition 4. And one of those criteria is after you create the maps without partisan data, you got to go back and test it to make sure it doesn't impair or unduly favor or disfavor one party. So the legislature is trying to define the tests and the methods that we use to determine that partisan symmetry. There's been some hubbub that Senator Bernie Brammer and the bill that he's going to run was just one test that would forever favor Republicans. What can you tell me about that, and do you think that's a good idea?
So, well, first of all, I didn't write Prop 4. Nobody in the legislature did, but it demands partisan symmetry, and it doesn't define it. And it also requires what you said, that it doesn't unduly favor either side when you talk about Republicans and Democrats. And in her lengthy ruling on August 25th, Judge Gibson basically invited the legislature to add some methods or tests that will define this partisan symmetry. So that's on page 39 and 40 of her ruling.
29 and 30.
29 and 30. Okay, I was close.
So
we're actually taking her invitation and doing it. It also doesn't define communities of interest, but that's a discussion for another day.
Right.
And so I am getting, you know, some calls and emails from people who have been emailed by Democratic-leaning organizations, special interests, saying, well, reject Senator Brammer's bill. And so I talked to Senator Brammer this morning. The Prop 4 does say methods. It's plural. And it's my understanding that he plans to amend the bill that he took to committee last week and add a total of three tests. So I think there would be a partisan bias test. There would be a means method test, and also a third one.
Efficiency gap.
Yep. So I think there will be three tests in there, and a lot of the calls and texts I've received saying we need more than one test. Now, the partisan gap test, which was in his original bill, that dates back to 1950s. It was used in the Wisconsin case, and Wisconsin's a bigger state than Utah. But none of these tests are perfect, and nobody's suggesting that they are.
Right, and the creator of that test said don't use it in a lopsided state because it doesn't work.
Yeah, so you're acknowledging we're a lopsided state.
We are a lopsided state.
Of course.
That's not a secret.
We're lopsided because usually Republican candidates get close to 65 or 70% of the vote.
Right, correct.
In most
and
30% elections.
Are Democrat, but they don't have a Democrat in Congress.
Yes,
that's
and,
what we're
and in
about.
Massachusetts, the Republicans have 35% of the vote, and out of their nine House seats, none of them are Republicans.
This is not unique to Utah.
This is not a unique problem.
Everybody gerrymanders is what you're saying.
Well, I'm saying that the claim that the Democrats are making in Utah, the Democrats in Massachusetts seem to see it differently when they're in the majority. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, so if you're going to use three tests now to determine partisan fairness or symmetry.
Yeah, it's just a way of testing the maps.
Right. Do you think you're less likely to get sued over that? Because some of the rumors I was hearing was that one test that would forever favor Republicans would impair Prop 4, which is the very thing that got you in this position in the first place.
Well, I will tell you, Prop 4 is Prop 4. And we learned last year, and that was a change of Supreme Court precedence, that we can't repeal and replace that without meeting a very high constitutional standard. But what we can do is continue to legislate. So I think we would have won a lawsuit with just one test. But I do agree with you. I think with three different methods of measuring political symmetry, that we would also win maybe even easier. And I think there's about 12 tests out there to choose from. But Prop 4 didn't say which test to use. And that is one of many defects in Prop 4, which is why we worked with the drafters of Prop 4 to try to replace it with House Bill 200, you know, 4 or 5 years ago.
SB 200.
And of course, Judge Gibson said, we shouldn't have done that. We couldn't do that. And again, that's new information. Well, we got that last year.
Right.
And so we're all reacting from that.
Right, yeah. Okay, let's talk quickly in our last few minutes about what else is on the specialist session agenda tomorrow.
There's a lot of there's a lot of technical stuff that you'll see on Monday, like recodifications and technical revisions. There's an interesting bill that would require Summit County to elect their county commissioners and districts, but that's
instead of at large,
like they do in Davis County where I live. But that bill also impacts Wasatch County, so we're going to try to run a fix to that so Wasatch County is left out. There's going to be a bill that allows the berm to be raised in the Great Salt Lake and that's really something that probably shouldn't be legislated. We should probably just give natural resources the ability to do that.
The north and south berm to be balanced.
And I think there's going to be some maybe an election law bill that deals with how long county clerks have to keep our ballots. I don't know if the final decisions, I haven't been told the final decision yet as of this recording, but there may be a bill that phases out people keeping their voter records private, because we're learning in a lawsuit that that may be problematic. And so,
is that problematic, though?
Well, it's problematic in the sense that, well, I mean, Phil Lyman's filed a lawsuit over it, so it's problematic in that sense. But we do know, I think it's problematic if you don't have an excuse, if it's just carte blanche. We know that, like, victims of domestic violence, they're allowed to have a carve out. So when and if we do phase out the privacy voter records, I think we'll give it some time, so that if you are in one of those specialized category, like a police officer or a judge or a victim of domestic violence,
or an elected official,
or maybe elected official. My records are not private,
right,
Lindsay,
but other elected officials have chosen that because of threats.
Yeah, I think that we'll give people time to go in and redesignate that before we just pull the rug out from underneath them.
So much more we could dive into, and
yes,
I could pick your brain about here.
Yes.
But thank you, Senator Tom Wendler, for your time today. I appreciate it. All right, still ahead on Inside Utah Politics, the government shutdown drags towards a week long. What the consequences could be if lawmakers can't reach a deal soon. Stay with us.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ayres.
Well, welcome back. The government shutdown is approaching the one-week mark. Negotiations collapsed as Republicans and Democrats remain firm on their budget plans. Thousands of non-essential federal workers are on furlough, as the president has teased the idea of turning some of those into permanent firings. Well, Representative Blake Moore joining me today. He's the vice chair of the House Republican Conference and Utah's most senior representative in Congress. Representative, thanks for joining me today. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate you and your time. So, in your opinion, how does the shutdown end if both sides are digging in their heels?
Right. It's particularly damaging to Utah's first district. I represent about just over 30,000 federal employees, and so it's particularly difficult in districts like mine. But this ends, simply put, if you get about five more Democratic senators to come on board, sign on to the short-term continuing resolution that gets us through the end of November and gets us time to finalize the remaining 12 appropriations bills. Three of them are already in, sort of, the Senate has done three, we've done three. They're working on making those look exactly the same so we can then vote on their final passage, and hopefully we can get that done soon. You know, when the first vote in the Senate, there was one Democrat senator, now there's three. So they're going to hold another vote on Friday, and if enough Democrat senators come on board, and in my opinion, you know, Minority Leader Schumer, Senator Schumer, he took a lot of criticism for what I think was the right thing to do back in March, and he doesn't have to vote for it. He can just let his members vote their conscience, and I think we get this back up and running, and hopefully it's not too long. And I would hate to miss a pay period, honestly, for our military and our other federal employees.
Yeah, it's definitely impacting your district particularly hard. So what is the negotiation happening with Democrats? How are you getting on board? Because they are saying we want subsidies, right, for Obamacare. We also want that Medicaid cuts that happened back in the Big Beautiful Bill. We want those back. So how are you getting them on board?
Yeah, so they're using the appropriations bills as leverage for things that have absolutely nothing to do with the appropriations process. Usually in a case like this, you want to argue about what's the top line number, what are we going to get to, you know, finalize these appropriations. And again, both parties have done this over time. Right now, the conversation about healthcare or Obamacare subsidies is, I think, a little disingenuous, because they're not expiring at the end of the year. What's expiring is the enhanced version. So in 2021, Democrats did what's called the enhanced premium tax credits or subsidies to ACA, and that's what's expiring. But those are COVID-era changes that were made, and all that it's going to happen is they're going to go back to traditional Obamacare insurance subsidies. And, you know, that's what's happening. So they're making it seem like all the subsidies are going away. That's not the case. It's the enhanced portion. And the other things that we accomplished in the reconciliation bill, the Big Beautiful Bill, like, those were sensible changes to Medicaid that need to have happened. And to hold that hostage as past legislation is just not a feasible request.
And I understand that you're not supposed to add appropriations things into a continuing resolution, right? It's just supposed to be, should we continue funding the budget at this rate, at this level, at this time, for however much longer? But how are Democrats supposed to get any of their the things that they want, their concessions, if they can't leverage here.
So anytime you're in the minority, you have just a couple of points to be able to submit some leverage, right? And that's usually like a debt ceiling X date, as you would call it, or when you would potentially default on some of that, or during an appropriations, annual appropriations battle. Again, they can go ahead and use that. I think they're very, they're not congruent. Asking for two more months worth of time to keep, government folks working, TSA agents, military, IRS employees in Ogden, like to have them go to their job and work, expect them to work and not get a paycheck, because they're trying to make this a leverage point. It's just that they don't match. They're not necessarily, there's still time to negotiate what the healthcare subsidies will look like. And again, they're actually not going away. And so I think that there's a lot of fervor over this when it's not reality.
So is there any coming to the table for Republicans who control all three branches of government, or is it just the Democrats have to come on board with us? We're not changing.
Well, we're not asking for anything in this particular continuing resolution other than, like, this is, ironically, this is President Biden level funding. That's the irony. All Republicans are now voting for it, and Democrats aren't voting for it, even though they've voted for it several times already. And so that's the irony here. So we're just saying, use this next couple months. They can negotiate on the appropriations bills. In fact, they are. So, each House of Congress, in the Appropriations Committee, they have a lead Republican and a lead Democrat, and they are in constant negotiation on getting these bills to the point where they want to finalize them. And Democrats have a say in that particular situation. They always have a say. When you're in the minority, particularly in the Senate, you always have a say because you are working on getting a bill and it has to pass with 60 votes. So it's not like they don't have a voice in this. They're just sort of leveraging this moment and asking for something way beyond the pale of what would otherwise be done in an appropriations time period.
Okay, so the administration is, like you, blaming Democrats here, saying they are asking for too much, but they've even gone so far as to put it on government websites. I know at this moment there has been a Hatch Act complaint violation. Do you find that appropriate?
So I haven't been briefed on that, nor have I even seen them. So I'm hearing about it for the first time right now. And if it's against the Hatch Act, then it needs to either be taken down or you have to adhere to that. So that's a simple, we've got to be willing to adhere to that. That would cut both ways.
Yeah, they're on multiple government websites, Small Business Association, even the DOJ website blames Democrats. Some with the Small Business Association, there's been reporting that said employees were even asked to put their out of office message to say Democrats are at fault here. Again, you're saying if it's a violation, then that should be taken care of.
Absolutely. No, I mean, the Hatch Act, if it's clear on that, then it should absolutely be taken care of.
Okay, interesting. We'll see how that shakes out. I want to turn to a local issue here that we are talking about a lot on this show, and that is the redistricting process. This particularly impacts you because you are a member of Congress, and there is a chance that your district lines, there's a good chance that they will change for the 2026 election. Do you have a map that you're interested in?
No. Again, this is one of those situations where this is the state legislature that goes through this process. I'm kind of, I've told my team, wherever district I end up in, I'm going to keep doing the same thing and try to serve the constituency as best I can. So I don't necessarily have a preference, and nor is any, you're actually the first person that's asked me my preference. I've talked to my team about them and looked at them. But Northern Utah stays pretty much intact. I'm appreciative of how the state legislature has gone about this process. If you look at the maps, they've adhered to the requested standards. That's a huge thing. That's an important thing. And as I look at what they've produced with the five maps that they've put out, like they're adhering to those standards. And let's kind of see where the chips fall. And I look forward to serving a constituency, and hopefully it's similar to what I've already been supporting, but if it changes, it changes.
Some Republicans here have given you some flack because you were on the board of directors of Better Boundaries, which got us into this situation and created Prop 4, which is the anti-gerrymandering criteria and commission that this is all about. What do you want to say to that?
Oh, it's very simple, actually. If I was in California, they would be calling me too much of a Republican or too strongly conservative. Like, fairness is fairness, and that's as simple as it gets. Like, you know, Republican-led states, Democrat-led states, they do this back and forth. What I hope to gain out of this, I hope that, like, a state like Massachusetts that typically votes 60-40 in favor of Democrats, but yet there's 9 Democrat members of Congress and 0 Republicans. Massachusetts is sort of where gerrymandering was sort of invented back in, you know, several 100 years ago or so. And when you look at, like, a state like Massachusetts that has 9-0, you know, they need to adhere to some standards too. And so I think there's an opportunity to be an example here and show other states you can do it fair and still lead in a conservative fashion. And that's what I hope to see.
So to your previous answer where you said, Northern Utah is probably going to stay pretty much intact no matter what map is chosen, does that mean you run again for reelection no matter what the maps look like?
Well, I don't know how this all plays out. They haven't been selected yet, so I'll reserve until that actually takes place. But I love serving the Northern Utah. I'm from Ogden. It's, having Hill Air Force Base is a kind of a central focus of what I do. It's a really amazing part of the state to represent. So we'll see how it all shakes out.
Congressman Blake Moore, appreciate your time today. Thanks for filling us in on what's going on there in Washington.
Thank you so much.
All right, we appreciate it. Still ahead, coming up here on Inside Utah Politics, Turning Point returns to Utah to hear the message the group Charlie Kirk founded is sharing just weeks after he was shot dead at Utah Valley University. Stay with us. Less than 3 weeks after Charlie Kirk was shot at an event at Utah Valley University, Turning Point USA returned to Utah. A who's who of political heavyweights filled in for Kirk to continue the Prove Me Wrong tour in his honor. ABC4's Northern Utah correspondent Kate Gardner was at Utah State University, where thousands attended.
Thousands of people filed into the Spectrum Arena.
There are people in our party who don't want us to do what Charlie did.
Right.
They just want to call each other names or not engage at all, and we can't fall prey to that.
One of the biggest topics during the panel discussion.
You have to be honest and call balls and strikes the way they are. And when you call balls and strikes the way they are, you can do it with respect and dignity.
The use of rhetoric.
But I will tell you this. If you don't call balls and strikes, if you aren't honest, if you aren't speaking with clarity, purpose, and principle, you are deceiving you, yourself, and you're deceiving the person that you're having the conversation with.
The prophet I believe in that just passed away for the past couple years has been talking about peacemaking and bridge building. And he very passionately believed that anger never persuades and that hostility never convinces anyone. Here's the connection I want to make. That is not soft. Peacemaking is not soft. It's the hardest thing you can do.
At the end of the event, some students were able to ask that panel questions. We caught up with one of the students who asked a question to see what she wanted to take away from this experience.
I think this is a really big event, and people on both sides can come together and that we still can have good discussions, good debates, that Charlie wasn't the only one doing that, and that there are more people out there that want to talk, and that we, as the people, we have a voice as well.
Reporting from Logan, Cade Garner, ABC4 News.
Cade, we appreciate your reporting there. Well, that does it for today's Inside Utah Politics. Stay in touch with us, won't you, on social media. You can find me on X and Threads and Instagram, Lindsay on Air, Lindsay spelled with an A. You can also find Inside Utah Politics in podcast form wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're looking for more national political coverage, check out the new show from our NextStar National Network. It's called Political Power Ranker. Our national political director and the head of Emerson College Polling look at who's up and who's down in the world of politics based on the data. Now, we carry that for you on our streaming app. It's free. It's called News for Utah Plus. You can download that now on Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV. Well, thanks for joining us this week. We will see you next week.